officials from the department and the president of the board members of Transnet. See, there are new faces today. I would like to make some introductions. I don't know if maybe the chair can maybe do the introduction, because ourselves, you already know us, unless there's one member whom you haven't met from Democratic Alliance. We haven't met with Transnet, isn't it? Once. Okay. Yeah, can I request the chair to introduce the entourage?
Thank you, Lady Chair. Good morning, all. Again, good morning, Chairperson, Mr. Bold, if I sit up. Members of the committee, my name is Vila Mabaso. I am the current Chairperson of Transnet Board of Directors. Here present with me, I have some of the members of our board. Mr. Brett Stockman, Mr. Peter Williams, Mr. Vusi Nkonyane. Also today we are with Mr. Siyabo Gama and his team, which I are asking to introduce them here. Yes.
And in the food.
Because some of them are new appointed. you will.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair. Before the Chair continues, just to check on our team, and we do have a few new faces that you might not know. At the end, there is Gert De Beer, who is our Chief Business Development Officer. Next to him is Eddie Thomas, who is our Chief Procurement Officer. And then Mr. Mlamu Itele is the Chief Operating Officer. Ms. Vanette Foster is the Acting Chief Human Resources Officer. Mr. Molatoang Dikete is our spokesperson. Bonito Konyela, I think you know, our previous spokesperson, who is the chairman of the Office of the Chief Operating. Shulami Kalinge is the Group Executive Strategy. The Group Company Secretary, Ms. Lotula Kumalo. In the Office of the Chief Executive, and then next to me is Mr. Yusuf Mohamed. Yusuf is the acting CFO. This week our CFO is on leave at the moment. I think we've introduced all the places that are here.
Thank you. Thank you, Sissy. Adhering to the special and financial mandate, we are obliged to come before the committee and update the committee on Transnet financial performance. Yes, which is instance 2015-2016, end of March. And we will ask Mr. Gama to update the committee. Chairperson, we are grateful for this opportunity, and I'll hand over to Mr. Gama. Thank you.
Before we hand over to Mr. Gama, for the new members, the new faces, I think it will only be fair if also we introduce ourselves. I'll start with me. My name is Dipuo Letsatsi Duba. I'm the chairperson of this committee. I will request from Honorable Teddy also to do the same.
My name is Moss Fili. I'm a member of this committee.
Gary Novanda, member of the committee.
Hashim Zaini, member of the committee.
Terry Standard, member of the committee.
Giswa Ranto, member of the committee.
Maybe we also need to the officials to introduce themselves, because maybe sometimes you need to interact with them. Jisan is our secretary of the committee. Is sitting next to me here, and on my right hand we have Rodney Nisi, who is the content advisor of the committee. He's the one sitting next to me here, and at the back we have a researcher, Lee Brown, Bramwell, yes. Also we have Yandiswa, who's assisting us with the logistics in the committee. We can now hand over to Mr. Gama to take us through the financials.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. We have been joined by the Director General of the Department of Public Enterprises, Mr. Richard Zuleke, as well as Ms. Vuyo Tlale from the Department of Public Enterprises, and also a representative from the Auditor General of South Africa is with us today. Thank you very much, Honorable Member. Good morning, and thanks for the opportunity for us to engage with you. I don't know whether it is my glasses. I don't know if you can. Somebody can just work a little bit on the light. But we do have, I think, we have not changed the presentation, we've sent the presentation beforehand. So if you can't see on the screen itself, the piece of paper in front of you articulates the position. So I think with your permission, Chair, I shall continue.
I'm sorry for disrupting the meeting. I just want to voice this out. It has been happening for quite some time that we get a presentation a day before we get the department of the entity in front of us. I think it is in the rules or in the rules of this parliament, that is, or in something that is written here in parliament, that we get a presentation 7 days before we get to the committee meeting, so that we are able to interact with the presentation before we get. Can that happen in future, so that we don't sit with something that we do not know what to do with it? Thank you.
It's noted, Honorable Rancho. Mr. Gama is here. He has the concerns that we need to receive these briefings before so that we are able to go through them. Honorable Stander?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We experienced a similar issue in my previous portfolio, and we were told that the presentation had to be received by 4 p.m. the previous day. So I think it would be good just to check. I know that sometimes there are last-minute changes to the presentations, and so perhaps, yes, we should get them whatever version as early as possible with all of the entities, and then if there are updates, perhaps meet the requirements, whatever they are. And perhaps that can just be checked on by your secretary.
Thank you, Honourable Stander. Can we proceed?
Thank you very much, Chair. It is noted. We think that we did submit about 2 weeks ago our presentation to Parliament. But I think if we then continue with the actual presentation, revenue increased by 1.7% in the past year to 62.2 billion rand, driven largely by an increase in our rail volume revenue, especially containers and automotive, which is really as a result of the road to rail shift which started a few years ago, as well as a 1.4% growth in petroleum volumes. Unfortunately, most of the other volumes were actually down, and I will talk to that in a minute. operating expenses were contained to 35.9 billion rand, which was on, an increase of only 1%, which is well below an inflation rate of some 5.4% attaining at the end of the financial year. This is due to aggressive management of costs, which has assisted us to make savings of 6.6 billion rand during the year against planned costs. EBITDA grew by 2.6% to 26.3 billion rand, which was 4.3 times the GDP of South Africa as an economy for the financial year. Gearing well within our 50% ratio of inflation to cover 2.1 times. During the year, the company was strongly cash generative. We generated 27.7 billion rand. And we were able to maintain our investment grade credit rating both for the domestic as well as the foreign currency outlook, albeit with a negative outlook going forward for both Moody's and Standard & Poor. We spent capital investment of 29.6 billion rand during the year, which means that up to now, since the MBS period, we have now spent just over 124 billion rand in capital expenditure, which has assisted us to make sure that we continue to catalyze infrastructure development and economic growth in our country. We continue to focus on our operational improvement, and we had improvements of just about 16% during the year. We spent 43.5 billion rand, or 100.6%. of our total major procurement spend on BBBE. Enterprise and supplier development equated to 36.7% of net profit after tax. 3.6% of our labor bill was spent on training, which focused on artisans, engineers, and technicians. Our disabling injury frequency rate at 0.69 continues to be world class, and this is the fifth consecutive year that we've recorded a DSR which is below 0.75. Percent. So if we go to page 2, just to give you a 5-year review, we experienced in the past year importantly a volume decline on DFP, which is largely driven by the economic climate that we find ourselves in. Importantly, as you know, growth over the past few years has been driven by growth in the Chinese economy. China has been diversifying the economy from a resource-hungry economy to services and technology, which means that the demand for some of our bulk commodities such as coal as well as iron ore has declined, and that has been met with what we call the commodity price crunch, where commodity prices went down. And as a result of that, a lot of the investment that we were expecting did not materialize. We've had, therefore, to defer some of our capital investment as a result of mining companies indicating to Transnet that at the current prices, they are not willing to continue investments in terms of new mines. So total rail declined from 226 million tons the previous year to 214 million tons, although, as I've indicated, we continue to grow in terms of our road-to-rail shift. Our maritime containers decreased from 4.5 million TEUs to 4.36 million TEUs, and our petroleum went up as indicated. Revenue, as indicated, was up to 62 billion rand. Our total borrowings stood at 134 billion rand at the end of the year, and the asset value of Transnet was at 356 billion rand at the end of the year, which showed real growth. All our financial ratios continue to be sound. Transnet is strongly cash generative. Transnet continues to be a going concern. All the fundamentals are in place, and we're very happy to say that the program in terms of logistics improvement of the country continues to move forward. If we go to the next slide, we just have the summary that indicates the shareholders' complex issues. Most of the shareholders' complex measures, especially the financials, were met. And the remaining four were within the 95% of budget. Most of this was largely driven by the volume achievement. I think if you look at volumes, when we don't have appropriate volumes in terms of cross domestic product, it does affect quite a lot of the ratios. But most of our ratios, in terms of competitiveness, we achieved 100%, we achieved 90% on sustainable development outcomes, 63% on operational excellence, capacity creation 45%, which is largely driven by the change in the economy and financial sustainability, remained intact as well. If we move to page 4, as I've indicated, the weighted group volume performance was 8.1% down, which is a sign of what has happened in the economy. But despite all of that, revenue was up 1.7%, and the earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, and amortization was up 2.6%. I think that you will note, Chairperson and committee members, that our depreciation went up a staggering 40% in the past year. That is in line with the capital-intensive nature of Transnet at this point in time. As we continue to invest counter-cyclically, we continue to invest despite what we see in the economy, because we know that the infrastructure that we have is going to last 40 to 50 years, and it's important that we catalyze economic growth through this investment as Transnet. Capital investment went up 11.9%. Gearing, as we said, is at a healthy 43.1%. Revenue and volumes, coal was down 7% during the past financial year. Iron ore and manganese was down 3%. Containers up 4.2%. Mineral mining, moderate decline of 1%. Steel and cement was the most affected, which was a 16%, and I think you would have seen in the newspapers, companies like Heysel Steel went into business rescue. You would have noted what ArcelorMittal asking TTI to intervene to assist in terms of the global prices. And agriculture bulk was also down 13%. For the first time in a long time, South Africa imports white maize as a result of a prolonged drought that we have experienced in the country. From a shipping perspective, there's been underutilization of the port system as a result of global shipping being down. I think, as you all know, global shipping is about 8.5% down. And we are experiencing a similar thing because when we talk about globalization, we also in the South are not immune to what happens in the rest of the world. Importantly, I'm telling you, our Africa strategy, which is our cross-border strategy, continues to improve, and we increased our business outside of the borders of South Africa to 2.8 million rand during the financial year. Operating expenses, as I've indicated, were well maintained. There was a modest increase of only 1%, which means we were able to decrease quite a lot of costs, despite an increase in personal costs of 6%, despite an increase of 4% in electricity costs. We were able to only fill critical vacancies. We did not fill vacancies that were not critical. And we also reduced professional fees, and we renegotiated prices, and we reorganized non-critical programs in line with what we could see pertaining in the marketplace. EBITDA continued to improve. In terms of contribution per division of Transnet, our freight rail division contributed 54% of EBITDA. The Port Authority came in at 25%, the port terminals at 11%, our pipeline business at 9%, and our transport engineering was at negative 1 cent during the year. You would see, if you look at the table on the top right, that we continued to grow despite national GDP being much less than what was the experience. We grew at more than four times the 0.6% that was experienced in the South African economy. In terms of assets, our assets grew to 356 billion rand, of which about 28 billion was current assets, including cash, so the company remains liquid, and also 302 billion in property, land, and equipment in terms of our balance sheet as at 31st of December, of March 2015. In terms of cash flow, I've already indicated that we generated 27.7 billion rand from operations. Our credit rating, although with a negative outlook, we are above investment grade, both with Moody's on foreign currency and local currency, as well as with Standard & Poor's. And we believe that the company on a standalone basis continues to be strong. So we are comfortable in terms of how the company is operating. But as you know, the company is 100% owned by the Republic. And therefore, anything that happens to the sovereign would affect the rating of Transnet itself going forward. In terms of capital investment analysis, we invested 51% in General Freight, which is where we have a very strong competition with road. And we are trying to make sure that we reduce the number of trucks on the road, and so therefore we are making a lot of investments in that particular area, which will assist us in terms of decongesting our roads and making sure that the fiscal spend less on the road while we shift cargo from road to rail going forward. You would see that in our capital investment, 60% was replacement and 37% was expansion. We would like to see this number at about 50-50, but as we indicated, the global economic slowdown meant that quite a number of our customers deferred their own capital investment and expansionary programs, and accordingly, this also had an impact on Transnet's expansionary programs themselves. The operating division, 75% went to rail, 14% went into our port businesses, and then 5% went into the pipeline engineering is complete. In terms of major capital deliverables, we took delivery of some 1,400 wagons and 700 for coal. We also took delivery of quite a number of new locomotives for the general freight area, in particular both diesel and electric. We also took delivery of a number of equipment in our ports as we continue our quest to make sure that operational efficiency improvement in our ports become part of the standing sustainable development outcomes that we're looking for, as we make sure that we reposition our port system into a world-class port system. In terms of private sector participation, it's quite important to indicate to the committee that the 380 billion rand that Transnet wants to invest over the next 10 years is not enough to catalyze infrastructure improvement and catalyze economic growth in the country. We would like to tap into the balance sheets of some of the private sector companies so that they can also come into play and assist us. We have projects, for instance, such as the Waterberg Coal Program, which is to link
Lipalale to office as part of a heavy haul coal link, which might ultimately in the future even link us with Mamabolo on the Botswana border, which is about 140 kilometers, and give us a seamless access to coal deposits on the waterbed as well as on the Botswana side into Mpumalanga to supply Eskom as well as some of the exports that the country so needs. In terms of intermodal, we are looking at Tambo Springs intermodal hub, which is near Gurule. We are looking also at funding for the Hot Flake coal loading terminal, which is continuing. Also on the branch lines, the Cirrus line, which is Prince Alfred Hamlet Wolseley here in the Western Cape, is going ahead. We also are in discussions with the Western Cape government and the private sector to finalize the George Meisner, the Choo Choo train in the Western Cape, as well as in Addis Ababa, Zamstown, and Port Alfred as part of some of the branch lines, which will assist us in terms of local economic development in those areas, either in tourism or in the agricultural space, where we continue to make sure that we catalyze. We're also looking at private sector participation in our grain elevators in East London, as well as at Agriport at the Port of Devon. At this point in time, we are looking at beginning to adjudicate tenders that are coming in so that we can have private sector partners. We've also advertised recently the liquid fuel terminals at the Port of Devon. But also in terms of regional integration, we're looking at different investments along the Maputo corridor. And also we're looking at our property portfolio. We have a number of non-core assets that Transnet owns, where we are looking at private sector participation and involvement there. We're also assisting in discussions on the IFT program with the Department of Energy and Eskom in terms of gas to power to support the energy mix within the country and to provide the kind of infrastructure that is required to assist us as we look at the carbon footprint of our country going forward. There's a number of other projects that we have in terms of the ocean economy through the PAKISA program, looking at rig repairs, LNG in places such as Saldanha, Richards Bay, and Puka. We're also looking at ship repair industries as well as port building to come into the country as part of some of the projects that we believe are going to assist our country in terms of creating the kind of impetus that is required for us to grow our economy below, beyond the 0.6% that we are currently experiencing. Volumes and operations, I think I've dealt at some length with some of these issues. Are safe to indicate that in terms of productivity and efficiencies, we continued to improve. You'll see that our on-time departures continued to improve. Our route densities also continued to improve. The problem that I think we continued to face during the year was around on-time arrival, which means that there's a number of incidents that are taking place en route that we need to deal with. These are largely driven by power failures. Most of the power failures are driven by cable theft. We have quite a lot of cable theft that takes place, and therefore we continue to engage also with other stakeholders such as the courts to make sure that when criminals are caught, that cable theft is treated as sabotage and that there are heavy sentences that are experienced by those as a result of some of their actions. In terms of export iron ore, we also continue to improve in terms of on-time departures. But there was a situation largely on the on-time arrivals, because we have had some old tipplers at Port of Saldanha, which needed quite a lot of attention and repair during the year. We have ordered new tipplers, which will be delivered to us from around 2018 going forward. However, the demand for iron ore, as indicated, decreased by 3% from the previous year. General freight was down 7%. We continue to see a significant improvement in terms of on-time departures as well as on-time arrivals. And that shows that we are quite prepared as an entity to compete with the road as we begin to, take more and more market share from road as a result of the depressed economy. In terms of our ports, our maritime containers are down. Our transshipment containers were down. Vehicle and transport equipment was also down, as well as electronics and base metals. And I think also last year, for the first time, there wasn't really any Christmas in terms of the normal surge that you would get between October and November. Everything remained flat, and our numbers reflect that. We continued to show improvement in all our ports in terms of ship turnaround times and train turnaround times, except the port of East London and except in respect of iron ore in Saldanha. So I think if you look at productivity and efficiencies, you could see that we are well placed in terms of we continue to claim our place in the world among the maritime nations. In terms of pipelines, we continue to improve, especially in terms of planned vessels actual. We did experience the 110 megaliter per week utilization on the DJP and NMTP, which is largely influenced by the volumes that are available to be shipped on the pipeline itself, rather than a reflection of what it is that the pipeline itself was doing. I've already indicated about the EIFR at 0.69, that for 5 consecutive years has been below 0.75. Unfortunately, we lost 8 of our colleagues during the year through fatalities. The fatalities were largely motor vehicle accidents, where our employees being transported from one area to another. We experienced those fatalities. One of the significant ones is where a Kumbi next to Lady Nathan caved, and we lost 3 colleagues in one incident there. So we are looking at how we continue to make sure that our drivers are aware of safety, and we have driver awareness campaigns that are continuing within the company. In terms of human resources, we had a target of 80% black. We're happy to report that we now have 84% of the employees in our company are black. In terms of the Group X scope, the target of 50% was not met. We're at 31.3, but we have since post the results announcement, we have employed a female CIO in the company, which is improving some of those numbers that we have. We continue to improve also at the levels below. We have very robust progress in terms of women in rail and women in ports. And if you look at the fact that just 20 years ago there were virtually no women that were employed in Transnet, I think we are making some very, very good progress. And also people with disabilities, We're at about 2.3%. We continue to try and close that particular gap. In terms of training, also you see that we did not do very well in terms of some of the sector specific trainees, and largely because of not receiving the money from the National Skills Development on part of the Transnet itself did spend 2.6% for our total wage bill. And we plan to spend more than 7.7 billion rand on training during the MDS period. We did achieve all other targets in our critical areas, and our School of Excellence continues to be a great flagship of the Transnet Academy's delivery system, showing some steady progress. So we created during the year 55,000 direct jobs in the economy, 73,000 indirect jobs, and about 184,000 induced jobs within the wider South African economy. In terms of community development, our Transnet Foundation invested more than 248 million rand during the year. The Pelo Pepper health train handled more than 177,000 patients. We also assisted more than 378,000 individuals through the training outreach programs. We placed in medical internship students ranging from dentistry to optometry and nurses, 1,353 during the year. And our teenage health program, where we have come up with a new invention to replace sanitary pads for teenage girls, and more than 10,000 girls were reached during the period in the last year. And then in terms of our rural and farm school sports development project, there were more than 4,000 program beneficiaries at provincial and national sporting codes. There were 105,000 learners that we reached. We completed two multi-purpose sports complexes at Bankara, Botulong, Northern Cape. We're on track here in the Western Cape to complete the new stadium in Saldanha at the end of September, which we should open very soon. And we also sponsored sports apparel and equipment to over 211 schools across the country to continue to give hope to the youth, but also to make sure that they don't do crime and nyawop and other things, and that they can be gainfully involved in sport. Our employee volunteer program also continued. We had we participated in the youth precinct in DR. We have about 40 youth at Saldanha Bay and Vandenberg in our tourism internships. Also, we provided solar energy to 91 households in Rosemead in the Eastern Cape, infrastructure upgrades of four preschools in Greenpoint and Kimberley, as well as other places, especially in the areas of the Western Cape, Eastern Cape, and KZN, which are provinces that are most needy. 753 destitute families benefited from food distribution, and also participated in adult basic training education, also SMEs that we established and people trained in some of our hubs. We do look after some orphan youth. We've taken some of them through universities, and some of them are continuing. We have about 40 orphans in our program. Those orphans got 80% pass rate in matric in 2015. 13 of them are in university as we speak. Sadly, one of them passed away in the past 3 weeks. However, now we continue to also look at engineering bursaries, of which 155 were awarded in the past year. Industrial capability building and transformation. as indicated, we're just over 101% in terms of the PPI codes in the past year. We were able to reach 10% of the government-owned businesses, qualifying SMEs, black-owned businesses, as well as managing enterprises. We improved our supplier development program to just over 119 million, and our committed SD obligations improved 250% over the past year. Our enterprise development initiatives continued to move forward. We do have the enterprise hubs that we set up in DR, in Saldana, at Carlton Center. We're looking at others in Tanzania and Richards Bay in the very near future, which is a partnership between ourselves, the SADS, Junior Achievers of Africa, and DITS, Transit Center for Systems Engineering. We're looking at innovation challenges there. We have container bakeries, especially in the rural areas, where we set to empower rural black women-owned cooperatives to run and operate container bakeries in their communities. And we have various incubation centers and academies, as well as other partnerships with people such as Anglo-American through the Cotisa Funds and the Black Umbrella programs, which are assisting in terms of SMEs to nurture black-owned suppliers so that they can consistently meet their contractual obligations. In terms of environmental stewardship, we continued to improve our carbon footprint, and energy efficiency continued to improve. During the year, we were able to save quite a number of tons of carbon dioxide equivalent during the year, which was through our road to rail. That was 315,000 tons that were saved as a result of us moving commodities from road to rail in the past year, knowing that rail actually emits far less than you would see from trucking. And also on actual total electricity consumption, we continue to improve efficiencies by as much as 7.5% on electricity and 6.5% in terms of fuel efficiency. The internal control environment, it was reviewed and assessed by the audit committee, and it is deemed to be adequate, which means that controls exist and they are adequately designed and documented, which shows that there is continued improvement over 2015 in terms of most of them. We are dealing now with the area of operational processes in terms of effectiveness, where we have been found to be slightly lacking, where they've indicated that we require improvement. But the audit committee of the view that the control framework that is in place from a financial perspective is appropriate and adequate, and that it meets all of the strategic objectives of Transnet, and that we have in place mitigating strategies to deal with all kinds of matters and issues in the finance environment in terms of controls, and that we do comply with all applicable laws and regulations, that Transnet assets are safeguarded, and that all transactions are undertaken correctly, and then from an accounting perspective, that everything is being recorded. So we are now just dealing with the area of operational processes which require improvement, and we hope that in the near future the audit committee can also give us a full bill of health in as far as that is concerned. Reportable PFMA issues, we must indicate that any matter which relates to losses and expenditure through criminal conduct, fruitful and wasteful expenditure of 25 million and more is reportable. I think we are very happy to indicate that we continued to decrease this RBE. We spent more than 46.2 billion rand. The amounts that are shown reflect that we are better than 95% of the economy in South Africa. In a depressed economy where we have seen a rise in criminal conduct as a result of where the economy sits, we reported about 1,032 criminal cases with the SAPS as it relates to losses through criminal conduct. And we continue to be committed to comply with the PFMA, and we handle all alleged governance breaches in a firm and expeditious manner as soon as they become visible to ourselves. And we finalized about 50,000 cases in the past year. So during 2016, there was about 20.4 million of remaining regular expenditure that was still under investigation. But we finalized quite a number of cases during the year. In terms of the assessments, in terms of reducing irregular expenditure, you see that there were 19 initiatives that were supposed to be implemented. We completed 12 of those 19. About 7 of them were still on track at the end of the year, and we'll be finalizing those during this year. In conclusion, Chair, the fourth year of MDF implementation in Transnet has proved to be challenging, especially in the context of the global economic slowdown. However, the board and management have demonstrated commitment and resilience in terms of making sure that the financial and operational performance of Transnet in 2016 remain acceptable. But I think also our agility and ability to continue to stay fit and to stay focused and to be able to implement changes that are required as quickly as possible and to adapt to change market conditions has been critical in terms of being able to deliver this kind of set of results. We will continue Transnet to stimulate the economy and to secure both existing market share, but also to aggressively capture new market share and look at new industries going forward, especially in the area of general freight, while we execute our capital investment program based on what we call validated demand. And so the management and the board are confident that the strategic initiatives related to road to rail are on track, and that as Transnet continues to reshape its core, we will be able to create a sustainable company that all of South Africa can be proud of for many generations, a company that can weather the storm. The economic environment continues to be very difficult, we try as much as possible to be agile, to create a brand that is innovative and that is admired in the country. And we've adopted value propositions that talk to customer needs, especially digital needs, going forward. And that if we are united as management, labor, and the board, and other stakeholders, and the shareholder, in terms of what needs to be achieved, that we can create a company that is a shining beacon for the Republic of South Africa, for Africa and the world. We have won quite a number of awards. I'm not into bragging. It's written there. You will see here. And thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Mr. Thomas. Thank you, Jefferson. I'm handing over to you.
Thank you so much, Jefferson, and to you, Mr. Gama. We had the presentation on annual reports and the financials from Transnet. I don't know if maybe through you, Jefferson, any of the officials or the executives, they want to make an input on the annual and financial report. If there are none.
No, there are none.
Okay, thank you very much. Then we can now interact with the report. And the honorable members, I have noted Honorable Ranto, Honorable Standa, Honorable Mazzoni, and Honorable City. Honorable Nopanda will follow after City.
Thanks, Chairperson, and thanks to the Chairperson of the Board of Transnet and Mr. Gama, the CEO. DG, let me officially welcome you. I just want to place on record that whoever has kept the presentation to him or to herself has disadvantaged us, because even the printing of the material is not good for a person who have to read it now. If we got it earlier, we would have done justice to it. But anyway, Chairperson, let me first appreciate the Transnet on the Hello Papa train outreach. It has also finally arrived in my area, and people are very much appreciative of the work that is done in the train. I'm talking of the one that is in Burgersdorp. They appreciate the work that is being done. They are getting help from the train. Thank you very much for your work. Okay, I've got a few questions or concerns that I would want to raise. It's two, in fact. It's one is the investigation that has been done by Competition Commission on Transnet on excessive pricing. I just want to check if the research that we got, is it true? Or is it also true that you have some clients who you charge less because they are your favorites? If you can update us on that issue so that we get clarity on it and we get the reality out of it. Are you also, the second one is, have you prepared yourself or thought of a plan on how are your operations going to be affected when the legislation of limiting goods up to 9,000 kgs from the road from public roads, or are you already there? Have you your preparations have already taken you up to that standard? You don't have a problem with the legislation that is coming. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, condolences to your department. Your loss is, of course, our loss as well. I have noted that there are an average of 7 losses per year in the last 5 years. Please can you report at the next committee meeting the specific intervention you will be making to ensure that that number is reduced to 0. The report on the training and social programs is wonderful. I just want to know whether you are monitoring specifically with regards to the training of artisans, engineers, etc., many South Africans are employed, are qualified with a number of skills, diplomas, degrees, etc., but cannot find work. Are you monitoring the effectiveness of your training to ensure that those people are actually entering the job market? Sir, you've mentioned that that there are tough economic conditions globally. Of course there are. I sense that there is certainly a globalization stalling. What are you doing to grow the domestic market share? Because that's basically where our growth, I foresee, coming from. Are you looking, I know that Eskom wants to bring gas into South Africa quite keenly, hopefully more so than nuclear, but are you having any discussions with this entity in terms of providing the pipeline? I know that they want to bring in gas from Mozambique. Are you in any way involved with providing the infrastructure from that? In terms of the grain imports, there was that influx of imports. How much did you have to import? And how did you find your logistic efficiency? You said that you were going to put in measures to ensure that there were turnaround times and things were measured properly. And what lessons did you learn and are going to be implementing going forward with another 3.4 tons? Expected to be imported in the next few months. In terms of the Transnet pensions, what progress have you made in terms of changing the rules to allow the benefits to members to increase, those benefit amounts to increase on a monthly basis in line with attrition? I know that that's your goal. I know that's what you want to happen. Is the court case hindering that, or are you making progress in there? I note in your presentation that the audit committee found that your operational effectiveness needs improvement for 2015 and 2016. Why are we not seeing development and improvement in this regard? What specific interventions are you implementing? You know, in these reports and committees, I note there's a very general reference to we are improving or we are working towards or whatever. But as with your reports on the PFMA requirements, you've got very specific, what are they called? Yeah, on page 26, and it either says completed, on track, or behind. It would be very helpful, certainly to me, and I'm sure to the committee, to know this is the challenge, and these are the specifics that we have identified, and it would be very helpful to get that kind of detailed information, of course, without sharing any commercially sensitive information. And that's it. Thank you.
Another Maroney.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, a few things. We are having increasing requests from the public regarding problems around Transnet and illegal occupation and illegal building of dwellings on Transnet land that remain vacant. And when one tries to contact anyone at Transnet, you refer to regional managers who then refer you back to the parliamentary liaison who then refers you back to a district manager. And by the time you get through to the right person, the necessary time period has expired. And, you know, people can't be moved off land after a certain time. And it's becoming an increasingly popular occurrence. As soon as someone finds out that the piece of land belongs to Transnet, immediately they're going to legally occupy the land because they know it's going to take an extensive period of time until action is taken. And once that period of time has expired, Transnet is then responsible to find alternative land for these land invaders to be moved to. Now, while I have all the sympathy in the world for people that don't have homes, I do understand that it does create an extraordinary problem for Transnet and also for areas that surround these open pieces of land. and I'd like to know how we can expedite the process when there are illegal land invasions on Transnet land so that we can avoid this kind of problem. Chairperson, then with the cable theft, I know the kind of problems that the Transnet has experienced with cable theft. They're not the only company that's suffering under cable theft. Our telecommunications companies suffer. I think it's a cable theft in our country that is a huge problem. I'd like to find out from Transnet what steps they're taking internally to try and mitigate the cable theft. Have they got a, for lack of a better term, I always refer to Cape Town has the Copperheads unit, which is a specialised unit that looks at cable theft prevention. Does Transnet have something similar? Because I live near quite a lot of Transnet land and I do see the Transnet security guards, and I don't think any of them would be adequately trained or armed for, you know, to fight someone that was coming in to steal cables. They simply don't have that kind of manpower. Chairperson, something quite worrying occurred yesterday in the House during the questions and answer sessions to the President, and that was when a question was asked about the Durban dugout harbour. Now, I think it's fair to say that Durban harbour's volumes have decreased dramatically, and they've decreased and continue to decrease because we're losing continuously to Maputo. And the reason is quite simply because Maputo can accept the larger vessels that have become the world trade standards that Durban Harbour simply cannot accept anymore. So what happens now is goods go to Maputo and then they transfer back into South Africa via truck or train. This is hugely problematic, obviously, for more than one reason. We've lost our status as the world's busiest port to Port Said in Egypt, and I think if one looks at the relative size of our economy, that can only be viewed as scandalous. By the time we finish building the Dugout Harbour, it will be 2025. Durban's already reached its maximum capacity. So could we please have an explanation as to what we're going to do in the interim, because Durban simply can't fit any more than it's doing at the moment. The Durban Dugout Harbour, I don't think that we must ever underestimate the importance of the project. After the Duke and Kusile, it is the largest and most important infrastructure project in our country. It was actually included in Operation Paquita and subsequently been bought. Now, I do want to preempt the answer that I suspect I will get, which is Durban doesn't need it because we don't have enough traffic coming in. And so I'm going to repeat, we do have enough traffic, but we are losing it to Maputo because we are not keeping up with global standards. And Chair, just the last thing I'd like to add on to what my colleague spoke about with the Transnet pensioners. We've had an increase in Transnet pensioner queries in the last month and a half. Something's happened somewhere along the way. The communication that was improving has stalled. We are having increased reports of Transnet pensioners who are trying to access medical care being unable to do so. Do you have any updates for us? We believe that the court case has now stalled somewhat. Could we have an update on where we sit with the court case? Just so that when we get these queries coming into us, we know what to answer. And has there been any change in who to contact with regards to the Transnet pensioners? Because I've been trying for a week and a half to contact people, and I haven't had much joy, so I think somewhere I've lost the correct contact details. So please just an update on that.
Honourable T.
A few issues that I want to clarify on. Let me start with the issue of the report that says you are at 1.3 female representation, especially at group executives. Surely is not a good story. That is reflected by the delegation that we see today. It's not impressive. I'm happy that the group executive has acknowledged that something is better about that particular issue. We'll have to move with it to address that particular challenge. It's not something that we are proud of. The second one relates to your community development province, the programs that you are conducting through Transnet foundation. I was looking at the slide that talks to very good programs that you are doing, which also indicates that the focus is mainly in areas where you have large projects or where you are operating. And since I am asking myself, then at which stage will people of Malamlele, Mdali, where I come from, benefit from some of these interventions? Because the focus seems to be in areas where you have large projects, and most of them would be. All I'm saying is that, in your CEO, you indicated that this company is 100% owned by the Republic, and that should also be reflected by the kind of interventions that you make. People of South Africa must benefit, not necessarily some provinces. I'm talking about, especially about people in rural areas. I see you have very good programs in the area of education, in grants and donations. All I'm saying is that you have to find a way of tracing. I think that also takes me to the issue of your community outreach programs. To what extent are you moving to ensure that people know the kind of work that you are doing? If I were to go to Nigeria, for example, do they know that there is a state-owned company that is called Transnet? So that in the long run they are also able to benefit from the 248 million that you have invested in that area. It's a concern to me. The last one is your integrated port management system. Are the challenges that you are experiencing in implementing the system? And if there are any, can you share with us those challenges? Thank you.
Thank you,
Chair.
Mine is on the matter raised by the Auditor General regarding the irregular and fraudulent expenditures. I wanted to find out what measures are being taken to correct it. The other one is on how the global economic growth has affected your Africa strategy, has affected the implementation of the Africa strategy. And the other one is on, it's still on the Auditor General, where he found your performance indicators for 2014, 15, and 15-16 being the same, that they are not measurable and all that. So what are we doing to correct those things? Thank you.
Chairperson. Thank you, members. The committee, and then Chairperson. Let me hand over to the panel.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the Audit Committee and the Chair of Transnet. Of the Portfolio Committee and the Chairperson of Transnet. There's lots of audit issues. And honourable members for your many questions. Some of which I've forgotten. let's start with the Competition Commission issues. We have noted the and have engaged with the Competition Commission in terms of what the actual issues are. We are quite comfortable that we'll be able to deal with all of the allegations that have been made. We don't think that the allegations are founded, and at the correct time we will engage and deal with those issues. The issue of the 9,000 tons maximum, we think it is a good thing, but we think 9,000 tons is too high. We think it should reduce
further, maybe to about 3,000 tons. So that all of these things could be on the railway instead of staying on the road. It may be the parliamentarians could assist in terms of that reduction. I think it will be good for the people of South Africa that you reduce it to about 3,000. 9,000 tons is still quite high. When it comes to the issues of the domestic share, we have indicated that the Transnet is going to diversify from in current markets and look more into things such as FMCG sector as well as manufacturing, which we think are quite critical. I'm going to ask her to just talk a little bit about gas and LNG and our interactions on the IPPs, and then continue the question. Chair of the PM.
Thank you, the GC. Chair, the Transnet is actively engaged with the IPP unit in the Department of Energy. Especially LNG gas, Transnet's role is probably a number of areas. Firstly, is to provide infrastructure for the importation of that, and the ports that's capable of doing that is Richards Bay, Cusco, and Saldanha. We're in advanced stages of planning and working with the IPP unit in terms of how the port infrastructure can look and accommodate the importation of that, including land being available for power stations in the port precinct or next to the ports. In terms of a pipeline question specifically, clearly the importation of gas will globally, pipelines is the way to get it to the industrial areas, and transit pipelines is ideally equipped. But there's a number of other players in SA Inc. that will have to work together to get those pipelines connected. But there's also an important rail solution. So we believe that transit engineering hopefully can help us build the wagons that some of the gas that need to come into the hinterland and come by rail, not just by pipeline. So those things are all in play. There's some specific actions between the various initiatives involved and various stakeholders in the next 2 months actually to position the gas future and the use of gas in South Africa to the global community. And Trump is actively participating in that.
Thank you very much. In as far as our engagement also with ESCOM is concerned, when we talk about growing the domestic market share, part of what ESCOM currently does is they truck quite a lot of coal, other than some of the coal which is not on the conveyor belt. Transnet and ESCOM has formed a task team, which is actively looking at how we could transfer that onto rail. There is also a project at the moment where a new railway line between Amelo and Amajuba is being built, which will assist in terms of repatriating large amounts of coal by rail into that particular station. I will ask Namoli to just talk a little bit about the importation of grain, the whole notion of logistics and investment plans.
Thank you. I think one of the lessons learned was our state of readiness. A lot of the wagons were not active, so we had to bring back almost 1,000 grain wagons back into practice, and it takes a lot of maintenance before you can use them. So it was slow in the beginning, you know, when we did that, but I think we've hit the right rhythm now to deal with the situation. It's a unique situation. We have not been in it before, this extent of grain imports. But it was at a level of capacity which has been dealt with now, particularly on the other side.
Thank you very much. In terms of education and training, we've just received 54.5 million rand from the Department of Higher Education, from the National Skills Fund, to assist us in terms of artisan training. We think that the level of training itself is adequate. In fact, while we hear there's a lot of commentators who talk about the levels of education and effectiveness in the country, our stance is that the people are adequately trained. What we need to look at is there enough job opportunities? Are we growing this economy at a rate that is sufficient to absorb the number of young people that are coming out of universities? Do we have enough energy to create new industries and new sectors? Do we have enough infrastructure to make sure that we export more from a country's perspective, are we manufacturing more? Is there enough business confidence to keep the kinds of jobs that are required? Those are really sort of the key issues and the key questions that we need to be dealing with. The effectiveness of the training, as far as we are concerned, I think they are adequate, and the people adequately trained. I think as a country, we need to move forward with the partnership and compact that has been created between business, government, and labor that is led by the president to make sure that we can create jobs much, much quicker. The in as far as the court case does impede certain issues because there are certain types of engagements that we would have, but barring the fact that there is a case before us that we need to deal with, and I think the were we to accelerate the court case, I think there would be other issues that we would be able to deal with much faster than we can, given the circumstances that are given rise to by the actual court case by the pensioner. In as far as operational processes, as the audit committee indicates that it requires improvement, it is largely really around the documentation of standard operating procedures. The work itself is continuing, but we have not been able to document, and as we begin to create an integrated Transnet entity, there's also lots of interfaces. We do have projects that we are looking at, like lead to cash, order to execution, which will assist us in terms of how we document these operating procedures. So the audit committee, I think, is comfortable with what we've indicated we are going to do in order to deal with these issues. You are going to see the required improvement again next year, because they're not short-term projects. These projects take time to implement, and once they've been implemented, then some of the things will go away. But we do understand that the need for us to be able to share what those issues are, and we will do that. The illegal occupation of Transnet land, I think it may be as soon as this thing happened, maybe it would just be routed to my office. We would be able to deal with it very, very quickly in terms of knowing who exactly needs to deal with what, instead of you trying to find out who is the correct person. I know all the correct people. I would be happy to deal with those issues. And thank you. In terms of cable safety, we do have interfaces with SAPS, with the HALT, with Telcom and ESCOM, and ourselves and other entities that are affected such as people like Joburg Water and Rand Water and those types of utilities, most of them they are affected by this. Where we look at what kind of interventions, including technological interventions, that will assist us in the future to be able to prevent this from taking place. We also have another program that we're looking at with PNAL, which would assist us with drones, especially in some of the high impact areas, because cable theft is mobile, and not only mobile, it's sophisticated. So as you arrest the people in one area, they quickly mutate into other areas. And so I won't go into too much detail in terms of what we are doing in terms of that. Also watch television. So and then the narrative around Durban and Maputo is worrying, if not incorrect. There is no truth that Durban has lost anything to Maputo. In fact, nothing could be further from the truth. The Port of Durban has been dredged to a draft of 15.9 meters at the entrance. And we have another 6 billion rand project at the moment that is assisting us. 15.9 meters. Church Dutton. That is at the entrance channel, which has both been widened as well as deepened in the past few years. The Port of Maputo is not capable of taking the kinds of ships that Devon is able to take in. It remains a small port. It does not handle more than 150,000 TEUs. Devon handles 3 million TEUs. So there couldn't be anything that Maputo could do. But also between CFM and Transnet, there are certain commodities that we think from a supply chain perspective to strengthen a Southern African logistics supply chain, that there are certain things that we think should go through Maputo from the Phalaborwa area because it is closed. But that is really between Richards Bay and Maputo, and not Devon and Maputo. Devon is too far from Maputo. Between Richards Bay and Maputo, where we've agreed in terms of what it is that needs to move there, there isn't. I think we must look at Maputo as maybe the ninth port of South Africa, because Chovahiki, that's what it does. There isn't anything that happens in Maputo that we don't know anything about. So I think the narrative is probably incorrect. The Devon dugout port is an important strategic project for South Africa. What we've done is that we've been having interdepartmental discussions between the Department of Public Enterprises, Transnet, and the Department of Defense and Public Works. And within those conversations, there's an area within the naval base in Durban at Salisbury Island. The Department of Defense has made that land available to Transnet. And it was felt that it is the quickest way to create capacity for containers. And that instead of going to the Devon Dugout port, which will require basic infrastructure such as breakwaters and to start a new port, that we actually prioritize the expansion of container capacity at Salisbury Island first before we go to the Devon Dugout port. So there is nothing sinister about that. It's logical. It then gives us enough time to go and look for the kind of international investors, but also to create the institutional framework that is required for the kind of TPP that we think should come through on the Durban deal report. So we are going to add another 2 million TEUs to this Salisbury Island capacity development. We're at an advanced stage. I think there's just one or two signatures that are required from the Department of Defense and Public Works in order to make that land available to transact, and then that project can start. And then as we sequence in terms of our port planning and development philosophy, the Durban-Tigard port will then be prioritized. So all that happened is, instead of us starting with the Durban-Tigard port in 2019, we'll start in 2024 to make sure that by 2031, we have the capacity, because what the Salisbury Island area is going to do is going to give us capacity till 2032, whether or not there is economic development in the world. And it is very real that container capacity in the world has decreased. Just this week, Hanjin Shipping Company of Korea went under because of the lack of freight in the world, because globalization has slowed down. Globalization, even in, you know, if you look at country terms, there's a lot of discussion amongst many nations about whether they should promote their own nationalism or globalization. If that's, you would have seen the ascendance of right-wing parties in the world, including the world superpower, around issues of globalization. And they are being discussed, they are topical and current. At this point in time, they affect trade. What happens from political economy is an important aspect in terms of what happens in a globalizing world. In terms of communications, in terms of the transit pension funds, we're not aware that anything has changed. We still have the same people that are running it. But we can always check. But Piet Maris is the principal officer of the pension fund. He can be found on 011-308-2752, Piet Maris, 011-308-2752. In terms of the issues around rural development, we have noted Transnet is a company of all South Africans, and we will reach out to every community. In fact, we have programs in every province, but obviously we look at needs. Some are more needed than others, but even in Limpopo, there's a number of those projects we can share in terms of what is happening in those particular areas. There was a question also around some of the challenges around integration. I think there is no challenge that we probably we don't have a strategy for in terms of being able to deal with those particular issues. So we continue to look at that. In terms of equity, we note the concern. We share the same concern, but we also have strategies in place in terms of equity. I have already been docked some marks by the chairperson in terms of that. So I so we have a plan. We have a plan to deal with those issues. The Africa strategy is quite critical, I think, for us. Because I think as our own domestic economy slows down, some of the economies around us are not slowing down as much as we have slowed down. So for us, it becomes an important input in terms of where we can experience growth. So we will continue to look at some of those issues. I think on the other general issues, I'm going to ask Yusuf to talk to those issues, because the Armenian varied and the Auditor General is always right.
Thank you, sir. Okay, I think the issue around the key performance for the APO, LPO, auditor performance information, but it's not that the result is being questioned. It's the definition of the KPI. And this forms the basis of our agreement with our shareholder in terms of the shareholder compact. So what the auditors and the auditor general are actually saying is that this cannot be, it's not smart. The point is it cannot be scientifically smart between the two annexes. So what we've done is, together with the DPE, as well as the auditors, we've revised the data dictionary for this financial year, 15-16, to make them smart. And then in October, we will be reopening the process with the shareholder to suggest, based on the revised data dictionary, the revised KPIs. So that will be illuminated for this year, and then going forward for 17-18, we will factor those into our discussions with the shareholder during the compact renegotiations. So that was the Auditor General AOPOs. The other issue was around the PFMA issues and the specific interventions that we're undertaking, as our Honourable Member mentioned, and 19 interventions that we put in place. Since 2012, we've undertaken these interventions. Happy to say that 12 have been completed and the remaining 7 are currently on track. If you look at the various categories of the PFMA issues that have been found, firstly around criminal conduct. Around criminal conduct, in the context of the 50 billion rand that has been spent via OPEX and CAPEX, is a minimal percentage. The biggest issue here is around fraud. Our processes, audit processes, are not designed to detect collusion. And these three items of fraud were as a result of collusive activity between various departments as well as some of our suppliers. We've lodged these cases of thefts, we've investigated, they've been disciplined, and in certain cases they've either resigned or they've been fired from the organization. We also undertake a process to recover some of these losses. To date, none of these have concluded as the investigations with thefts are still ongoing. With regards to the irregular expenditure, a lot of those 17 and 19 initiatives are on contract lifecycle management, around data analytics, supplier integrity processes, as well as online training and accreditation for all of our employees. So levels A, B, C, that means group executives, general managers, etc., have all gone through extensive training. At the moment, we are training 5,000 employees at level D and F, and there's an online accreditation process. If the employee fails the delegation of authority test, fails a PPM test, etc., delegation of authority is revoked. They cannot transact from a company perspective. So we've got all of those processes in place from a mitigating action perspective. Compared to last year, the number significantly reduced to 0.009% of the total expenditure of 50 billion. From a fruitless and wasteful expenditure, again, we've got processes in place. Excess controls have been removed for certain individuals or for certain levels where there is a potential for producer activity. We've reviewed the cost center reports, so we've got multiple programs in place with regards to the PFMA. In terms of the internal control environment, as the GC has mentioned, from a financial perspective, they're adequate, they work effectively, and they operate effectively with regards to the effectiveness of the overall operational environment. We've redefined all of the underlying processes that these relate to. So again, as the chief GE mentioned, order to cash, lead to cash, and some of these processes with the appointment of the CEO, we are really looking to update all of the end-to-end processes through our TDCC. Number one. Number two, Once those are updated, they will be translating to the updating of the control frameworks with an identification of minimum controls as well as critical business controls. Once those are done, they will be implemented across the entire organization with regards to the first line of defense. And as the GC mentioned, this is not the once off, it's a continuous journey. There are multiple processes, multiple handovers, and multiple interfaces from operational perspective across the supply chain. So this is a 24-month program.
Thank you very much. I think I'll hand back over to the chair. I hope that every member's question was answered. There were many.
Thank you, Mr. Mama. Handing over to you.
Honourable members, do we still have follow-up questions? I notice Honourable Ranto, Honourable Stender. Before they do follow-up questions, I also wanted to raise a point with Transnet in relation to well, we appreciate this high representation, Mr. Gama, but of importance to us, it will be three critical issues in relation to one of the 9.10, the ocean economy, the Baltic economy. There was an announcement that we have invested so many millions around Saldanha. We'd like to hear the progress in relation to that capital investment and where are we now. The other critical issue is really the Africa strategy itself. You mentioned that even if we're not growing at the rate which we want, other countries around us are growing. Are we implementing the strategy correctly or aggressively to tap into those markets? There's a lot of movement around the countries in terms of minerals, timber, whatever, in Africa. Are we not able to aggressively get into those markets and try to at what level should Transnet need help, maybe, if you need help, to can have a share of those markets? The last one, it will be in relation to decongestion of the roads. Do we have progress in that? In the last presentation, you mentioned that some of the goods cannot be on rail, and we see a lot of movements around, and do you have some alternative ways to can capture the truck market into the rail system? Then Honorable Rancho will make a follow-up question, followed by Honorable Sandy and Honorable Sid.
It's not a follow-up question, Chairperson. I just want to raise concern on around the presentation of the community development programs that Transnet has. Transnet mentioned all these programs and the some areas where the programs are, but in other programs, they are just Transnet mentioned the province. And I think in the provinces there are regions where I think for us to be able to go, if there is anything in the region, just like the Transnet yellow paper train, I am able to know and to go and look at what is happening in that train. But other like the SME training and the establishment of kitchens and whatever, it's just the province and not the actual place. And also checking the 40 offences that are currently in the program, are they picked in one area or were they picked around certain provinces? Are they stationed in one area, or are they around the provinces or nearby where Transnet operates, maybe in the near their head offices?
Can we get clarity on that? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. You know, I was sitting in the National Assembly yesterday, and we hear a lot from departments and ministers. We've got a committee, we've got a task team, we've got a Ndaba, we've got a public participation, we've got a whatever. And it made me think about Elvis Presley with his very wise words. A little less conversation, a little more action. So that's just what I was thinking yesterday, and so I hope that you'll take that home with you. Then I just want to find out, just for my knowledge, my colleagues probably know more than I do, but I know that there was that there is a local company that manufactures trains that wasn't included in the ASM Dundun. Now, has that, but I know that there were 32 local suppliers absorbed into the production of seats, etc., to produce these new trains. I just wanted to find out more information. Who's the company? Are you aware of this company? Are they being included? And then the last thing, like Honourable Rantorp, I also want to represent my constituency, which includes the Greater King Williamstown area. I'm sure you've heard of the Mbaza Industrial Hub. You know, mistakes were made going into democracy, and I just wanted to, let me clarify that, because I don't want to be misquoted. But things like artisan colleges, training colleges, you know, were cancelled. One of the things is what happened to this Mbaza Industrial Hub is that the government subsidies were withdrawn and the companies moved away, closed down, and left an entire community jobless. Now, I just wanted to know, there is some rail infrastructure there. There are huge factory structures still there. Unfortunately, I see that they're starting to be dismantled. But with the situation of Dimbaza, which is close to East London, which provides an inland route, etc., there is literally on-site labour and plenty of labour who would be enthusiastic to participate. Is that on your horizon? Has there been any mention, any consideration? Is it included anywhere in your plans, or is it something that you would perhaps consider going forward? Please? Dear Kwela? I believe. Thank you.
Well, Teddy?
It's not a new question. It's on the one I asked earlier, the integrated port management system. I would like to know if there are challenges that you are facing. If any, I would appreciate if you can just show with us. I don't remember if you did respond to that one.
Mr. Gama said the questions were too mean. So.
I apologize on his behalf.
Thank you, Charles. I'm being nurtured appropriately. Operation Pagisa. Mr. Pteles, can you give us some progress?
Okay. I think, I think Operation Pagisa in Saldanha, I think it was specifically around Saldanha. It is an area of providing facilities to support the oil and gas industries for the rigs that will come out for maintenance. You know, so that we are doing already. And we have seen a little bit of a decrease at the moment with the oil prices, you know, where they sit. But as and when they come, they make the calls to, you know, to come and do maintenance. We do that. We provide facilities in Saldanha. It goes along with the support industry and the work that the support industry must do, which must be able to maintain the pipes, the valves, the pumps, all types of machines that you find on these oil rigs. Then it is also port oil and gas and support to rig repair ship repair facilities. So that seems to be going, you know, in line with the industry demand at the moment. And we continue, you know, to respond and to provide the capacity as they request. I cannot tell you the exact amount. I think we've talked about how much has been spent. You know, I cannot tell you the exact amount right now, but I think we're able to respond to their requirements to come and talk and do maintenance. They do, you know, 3-4 months when they come there. And we get to get like, you know, each rig that comes creates about 1,000 jobs in the area. So it's quite significant for the period that is there. And we're able to give them the kind of facilities that they require. So that's just for kind of specific.
On the Africa strategy, I think it's quite an important aspect in terms of our future growth. We're looking across the community, neighboring countries. And I think it's an important springboard in terms of where the next growth phase, the agriculture growth phase of China is going to come.
Of gas in Mozambique and Tanzania, there are certain opportunities within the region and in places such as Zambia, the DRC and Angola that specifically are close to us that we can look at. We do have a cross-border strategy and a number of projects that we've identified that we are pursuing, which we believe will also promote regional economic integration and will promote both maritime as well as hinterland integration in terms of kinds of projects that we have. In as far as decongestion of the roads, rail is into the longer distances as well as larger puzzles. So the certain things that will always be on the road, like last mile type logistics. So you always see trucks. We will never completely eliminate trucks, and it's not desirable that trucks should not be seen. So there's some kind of cooperation in as far as that is concerned from a logistics perspective. However, we think we can still do much more in terms of long distance. And there's a number of technologies and strategies that we are coming up with, like bimodal technology, and that maybe I'll ask Namoli to talk a little bit about that and how far we are in terms of that, to try and decongest the roads. What we've also been able to do, as indicated, we have eliminated 339,631 tons of carbon dioxide emissions as a result of our road to rail strategy. Lamori, do you want to talk a little bit more about decongestion?
Okay. Speaking specifically about bimodal technology, we basically went out to the market and got interested parties. We selected two types of technology to be piloted on the Cape Corridor, coming down this way, and also on the Durban Johannesburg Corridor, which we call NASCO. So we're at the point of contracting with these preferred bidders to be able to try out this road railer, which basically is the kind of technology that runs, trailers that run both on road and are able to run on rail as well. So we think it's going to help us a lot, and it's the kind of technology that customers in the sectors who are not very strong at the moment are asking for, like manufacturing sector, which the group CE spoke about. In the fast-moving consumer goods sector. So very soon you will begin to see us piloting this technology, because I think within all these things, listening to what customers themselves are asking for. In Zimbabwe. We talk about Zimbabwe because we've got a lot of activity also coming out in the area, on the branch line space. So with decongestion, that's where we are. So the decision around the 9,000 cages and the potential reduction of those kind of tons on road, I think will support us to accelerate the road to rail effort.
Mm.
Okay, thank you very much. In terms of the Transit Foundation publishes in quite some detail the different projects that we try to summarize in one page. I think there's a booklet, and I'll ask Annette Foster to talk a little bit about this. It talks about to the different districts, the different provinces, the different towns that we have these projects, whether it is the orphanage projects, because they're all from across the length and breadth of the country. But I think also that can be made available to the honorable members. And some of it may even be on the website, but I'm not sure. But I think that the actual booklet, I think it would be good that they be made available. And also from a communications perspective, the chair in here, she always lambasts us, she says we don't communicate enough.
Mm.
In terms of the kinds of things that we do, and that we are not sufficiently engaging the stakeholders. So I think, Muratuan, where is he? So Mr. Dikete is also here, he says. So we need to do probably a little bit more so that people and communities understand before time and in the different areas. Because at any point in time, anywhere in the country, we can open our own newspaper, a daily newspaper, to tell you the Transnet story in terms of the things that that we're doing. So I think Muratuan, maybe I'm going to give you after Sanet Foster to come forward to tell the committee what you're going to do and to make sure that the stakeholders know what is happening. Sanet?
Thanks, Jay. So that's just going back to one of the questions in identifying the deprived communities. We work very closely with the Department of Health as well as education in identifying those top 20 trans communities that actually need attention on an annual basis. In terms of that, there's various, and as our GCE said, there's a whole booklet that provides detail in terms of the kind of programs that we provide. Also in terms of the Bill of Paper time, we've got a booklet that actually covers full detail of the whereabouts of the trains as well as the details of where they're visiting and what is the plan for the financial period. The same with education. We also provide comprehensive education and social support to orphans and youth in terms of those that we took into our care. We provide comprehension psychosocial support to those people in different people. We see in Waterfall, we see life skills camps to some of them that has been presented. We also see that there is specific culture reading through provision of mobile libraries, where we actually have 20 mobile libraries. We identify schools that we could provide these kind of skills to. And then this can go on in terms of this, in terms of experiential training on health for students that we provide. So there's multiple of aspects that we actually cover as part of this, and I think I want to agree that we are actually not promoting sufficient in terms of the energy that is really shared into the national environment. Thank you.
I just want to add on what Ms. Foster said. Actually, there's nothing nationally that you hear about the Transnet, about Transnet, unless you go and dig for yourself because you've got an interest in something that Transnet is doing, then you will find information about Transnet. As much as Mr. Gama said they can write they can have a newspaper, I would be very glad if they can take that initiative and have a newspaper that speaks about some things that are happening in Transnet, because there is nothing nationally that you hear about Transnet. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah,
you think this paper will sell, Honorable Rancho? The newspaper won't sell because I think they are the only SOE which they don't have business with doctors. So it won't sell.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I think that's it. That
you are not on the floor.
I think also based on the current discussion, Madam Chair, the first thing that we will do effective immediately after this is to exploit all the channels of communication that we have within Transnet. We are on social media for status. We're starting to realize also this agent need that we need to make noise about all the activities that Transnet is doing. And we are all over the country, definitely. And we would like to ensure that I think effective immediately, even the implementers, because we have implementers throughout the country who are involved in a number of projects. Perhaps we haven't been that vocal and loud enough from even the regions where these activities are taking place. One of the plans from where I sit is to ensure that I think now with even more speed, to ensure that the guys from the regions within the provinces are given even more space to ensure that they communicate, so that it doesn't only have to wait for the group for our head office in Johannesburg. Because we do have also the communication department within Transnet throughout our operating divisions as well as the provinces. We do have, even tomorrow, the 15th is tomorrow, we are having what we call the communicators forum, where we have invited all our communicators throughout the country. And definitely this is one of the points that is going to be even emphasized more, to ensure that there's nothing little from where we are, big as we are. We just have to make sure that we exploit the platforms that we have. And we also have our own internal magazine that we tend to circulate amongst ourselves. It is on our agenda for tomorrow, where we were saying, going forward, we must ensure that we even invite those people who would like to be part of these magazines to make sure that the reach is even wider than what it is right at the moment. I think, Madam Chair, I would leave it there at this particular moment.
Thank you very much. I think what he's saying is that he will do it. The Alstom, yeah. The Alstom Kidala thing, I don't know anything about it at all, actually, because it's a plaza issue. But Eddie Thomas is here, and I don't know, from the procurement space, I think the procurement people talk to one another. And some of the companies that you talk to are very similar, because what we try and do is to make sure that everyone in South Africa is involved. But I don't know about a particular one that they were left out.
Chair, there were a couple of companies. Trans is also capable of manufacturing the planes for Prasa. So there were one or two companies in South Africa who were involved with coach building. Now, I know that in terms of the Transnet transactions, where we were awarded the build of our locomotives to four OEMs, we do know that the OEMs have engaged with the local industries, and work has been allocated to the OEMs to the local industries to meet their local content obligations. So there you would find through our OEMs that the guys would then be doing work for our OEMs who are manufacturing locomotives for Transnet.
Thank you very much. On that, I think I'm familiar with now that you talk about some of the issues here. We'll see what can be done in terms of inclusion, where the capacity. The other important aspect, I think, even if one is left out of current procurement, is that the African Union has actually designated South Africa as the rolling stock supplier for the entire continent. And we are busy at the moment looking at what capacity exists both at Transnet and also in the private sector to be able to manufacture rolling stock for the rest of the continent, and to the extent that some companies like UCW, for instance, in Niger and others like Dobile also make sure that they are involved in that going forward. And I think she has a follow-up question for you.
A follow-up question, Robson.
Not particularly, but you know, earlier on in my remarks, I mentioned, and you agree, globalization stalling. We need to investigate domestic and regional growth, and this is exactly the argument and why I asked the question. If Transnet is capable of manufacturing the trains, why haven't we? I'm glad to hear that going forward we will look at manufacturing trains for the regional area. That's great. Because another one of my questions was surrounding the job market entry of all of these wonderful artisans, engineers and things like that, whether you are monitoring, whether the people you are employing are actually starting to work at the completion of their program. So if Transnet starts investing where they should in their own capabilities, their own provision, growing therefore domestic and regional markets, we won't be so reliant on global, and you and I are on the same page. You know, many countries are going a very nationalization way. So then at the same time you can boost employment, grow local, and then it's kind of, you know, we're working towards an upward cycle rather than a downward spiral.
No, thank you very much, Chair. No, I think there's broad agreement. In fact, the one of the things that we'd like to do is to invite the committee to come and see firsthand in Pretoria and Goosefort some of the work that we're doing in assembling locomotives. But also here in Cape Town we do a number of coaches and soldiers. But I think the composition of the committee has changed somewhat. So I think that would be good. And then when it comes to the inward looking practices that we had in the past, where places like Dimbaza in the Eastern Cape and Gwaster in KZN thrived because of those policies and the subsidization. We do have a number of programs to look at local economic development, and as you say, the infrastructure already exists in those areas, and some of it might not be there for too long because when we sleep at night, some people do certain things. But Mamoli is much more qualified to talk about what Transnet is doing about this.
No, thank you for that. I think we've got Alice Day grant quarter set proposal, you know, which we are looking at to do our deadline. But it's, again, it's premised on the demand of specific activities that need to be done by the local, you know, area. And so we are looking at that proposal, and so something should begin to happen in that area. We did then cut on the earlier line, which is from Queenstown going up the Guy route, and there the activities were not forthcoming. And I think, you know, so the kind of support we also need is that once we've done up, you know, these corridors, that we ensure that the infrastructure is used and there is activity on it. You know, then the Elbitan coal people, which is also in the Queenstown area, they started and they were moving containerized coal out through the north of East London and then stopped. I think they went into business rescue, but you know, discussions are commencing to try and get that going again with an intention of wanting to go the heavy haul route, you know, to the port of Mbuka. So there will be, you know, some technical work to be done there. And so those are the key big ones, you know, activities that are coming through. We've also had the BMW and the Mercedes-Benz coming to us, basically wanting to also use, BMW wanting to use the East London channel for exports of cars. No, from Pretoria, Rockland, to also be able to export through the port of East London. In which case, then, you know, we could give a service to both BMW and to Mercedes-Benz. Bring BMW down and come up, you know, to the hinterland with Mercedes. So those are the kind of initiatives where we've had, you know, firm requests by potential users. So, you know, we encourage also that they come forward and be able to tell us specifically what they want to move at what commodities. But then, you know, it makes us see the business rationale why we should do it.
Honourable members, our time is no longer allowing us. The last one, Honourable Ranto.
Okay, thank you. I apologize for the time, but I just wanted to raise a question to Mr. Uteledi. Because when you say the corridor that goes via Queenstown or from Queenstown is no more, it's not profitable or viable. When you started it, was there a business that you have seen that could take the company somewhere, or you that's open? Because in Chatterton, it has been a practice that has been happening in companies, in entities, and even in government departments to just build houses. For example, in an area where the houses are not needed, they would build the roads that are going nowhere. You see, that's why I'm asking this question. It's not something that is not happening. It's something that is happening. That's why I'm asking. When you open that corridor, are you expecting a big business, or you will not opening a corridor in case there is a business? Thanks.
No, thank you very much. The historical perspective is indisputable in terms of what happened in the past when we used to have marketing boards and all kinds of agricultural entities that were organized around some of those activities. And though some of those things have now long dried up, but we're always looking at what are the ways of looking at local economic development, and a lot of agricultural activity that is sometimes promised that can resuscitate some of these lines, like growing timber and some of the agricultural activities like moving grain that people talk about. So some of it is really historical in nature. And to the extent that we are able to resuscitate certain other branch lines, it's driven by what new industries can come in there. And we try and work with the society to deal with that. Just a final issue around the integrated port management system. I think I have indicated that we don't see any challenge in terms of its implementation. I think from where we sit, as Transnet, we're comfortable that we'll be able to implement. Yeah. I think that sort of answers all of the questions, including the ones we had forgotten.
Thank you so much, Mr. Gama. You really indeed answered all the questions. But lastly, not arising from the presentation, the issue of the future goals, which announced that they won't be able to borrow to lend the SOEs money going forward. We know you have not been relying on handout from government. And, how does this impact on your credit rating issues, or maybe the investor confidence of Transnet?
No, thank you very much. We have engaged with Future Growth, who have made those utterances playing, I think, to the public gallery instead of engaging us directly, and probably also bending client confidentiality matters between a bank or a funder and a client. We have engaged with them in writing in terms of indicating that indeed what they said had the ability of moving the market and has had cost implications. We are preparing our statement of claim in terms of that. But as far as we are concerned, future growth in our lives is not a very significant player. I think in terms of what we borrowed, they are less than 3% of what Transnet has borrowed. We've engaged with them and indicated to them that they need to retract the statement. They need to apologize to Transnet around these issues, because there isn't anything that Transnet is hiding. If they asked us whatever it is that they wanted to ask, we would have been able to engage with them on it, and so we are not going to engage with them until they either trust in terms of what they mean. We have not been borrowing anything from them. We have not asked them for anything further than what they already had borrowed us. But as far as we are concerned, as Transnet, we have many sources of funding. There are many people who are willing to fund us. We don't really know where their pain came from in terms of what they had to say. We think that the utterances that were made were unfortunate, and the utterances were not warranted.
Thank you very much. Before we close the meeting, we'd like to request DG, our shareholder, if he has something to say, or Eric.
Of course, thank you, Chairperson, and good afternoon, members of the committee. Well, Chair, I think we support the presentation of the company, and I think more important is to highlight the view that what the CE and the Chair has emphasized, the implications of the change in the broader economic sector. It puts the company a little bit under pressure to diversify and change its strategies as it goes. So sometimes as plans are put along the way, there is a flexibility in terms of adjustment because of the realities of the economy. And I must say that at length, they did not complain in their presentation. They took the challenge as it comes, and we still are making profits. So I think for that we are quite happy, and I think they require support going into the future. Thanks.
That brings us to the end of our meeting, and fly safely back to your homes. It has been a pleasure to interact with you. At least there was no drama today. Thank you very much.
I just want to say something.
Oh, I'm sorry. The chairperson wants to say something. I nearly took her out.
I just wanted to thank you all today, and I profusely, on behalf of Transnet and Transnet as a whole, Transnet Board, we profusely humbly apologize for any unforeseen incidents, incidentally, what you talked about the presentation, and then we promise that in the future, I don't think it will happen. And other than that, we are truly honored and privileged to appear before you, and we've noted all your concerns and also your valuable input. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Honourable members, we'll remain behind to do the minutes of the last meeting. We'll have 5 minutes break.
Zimbabwe will discuss it.
I'm not going to be able to do that.